Welcome to But Why Though, the podcast, a roundtable conversation about all things pop culture. I'm your host, Alex, and I'm joined this week by Kate.
Hi.
And Matt.
Hello.
And this week we are talking about conventions, not specifically Comic-Con, just pop culture conventions in general, access, neglected parts of the map, the experience itself in person and how that sometimes gets neglected. Sort of the whole idea of like who gets these and how do they get them and all that. But before we get into that, is there anything that you guys have been enjoying this week that you want to talk about?
Oh, that's a big question because we just wrapped GDC and I don't think I've had anything. I feel like that's a lie. I feel like there's been something I've been very obsessed with. I just can't think about it right now. Actually, I will because I'm writing a piece about it. The Pit season 2 is doing very, very good work.
All right.
And what I mean by that is The Pit has taken its time to showcase like different elements of the healthcare system that leave people either re-traumatized or like without the ability for help so many times, but they've done it without feeling ham-fisted. One really quick example from the last episode is there's this nurse, Dana. She's the charge nurse. She's in charge of like everything going well. And one of the young student doctors comes up and was like, "Hey, Dana, this is in your name. Why am I taking it to this bed?" And she was like, "Because my health insurance will cover it and hers won't." And then she's like, "Isn't that fraud?" She's like, "I don't know. Arrest me." And I'm just like, one, that's more of the energy we need. But two, yes, to get a little serious, it takes place across 3 episodes and they actually take the audience. Because if you don't know anything about The Pit, it is literally a 15-hour shift. It is 1 hour is 1 hour of that day. So it's in real time progressing. So 3 of those episodes are dedicated, not dedicated to, but one of the things that happens is the processing of a rape kit. So a woman comes in, she's reporting a rape, and she has to go through it. The reason why this is really important is that a lot of people do not understand how long a rape kit takes. They do not understand how re-traumatizing it is to have it done, and they also don't understand always the type of care that's needed, not necessarily in babying somebody who's a survivor, but actually talking them through everything that's going on. And we see this throughout the episodes. And the reason I say it's important is because one of the reasons that people don't get them done is because they're scared of them, because they don't know what's happening. They don't know what's gonna happen. And there's a part in it where she says that she's done and she's leaving and she goes for a walk and she does end up coming back. But it's a very human moment, and I think that what The Pit captures in a medical drama is why so many people watched medical dramas to begin with, to look at something that they're a part of, like the medical system in general. And it does it without feeling too preachy, without feeling like it's just ham-fisting everything in there. And it does it with intent, and I think we need more stories like that, and I think that it is doing good work in that it's kind of demystifying a bunch of these elements. So yeah, there's a lot more. Those are just 2 examples, but that's what I'm obsessed with. I don't watch many shows week to week. I watch Real Housewives of Beverly Hills and The Pit, though. Those are the 2 that I watch week to week.
Honestly, great choices. And the Pit thing that you were saying reminded me of, I don't know if you ever read Chanel Miller's 2019 memoir, Know My Name. Because that is, if you listening at home are a person who doesn't fully grasp why somebody might not come forward with a rape accusation, that book will spell it out for you very, very clearly. And there is, I think, a whole chapter where she talks about the process of the rape kit and all that stuff. And the whole book follows through the trial too and everything. But like, if you want to wrap your head around how difficult and emotional those things are, and all that, like that, yeah. Check out that book. Check out The Pit. Like, yeah, it's a conversation that people don't really like having or shining a light on, but it's very, very important.
Yeah.
What about you, Matt?
Watch The Pit.
I went to GDC and should have some GDC content out by the time this episode is there.
Was there a favorite thing at GDC? Like the booth that you kept being like, I should go back to that? Like, was there nothing there that you were like, this is my thing, this is what I'm happy about?
It was fun.
Okay. Matt had a good time at GDC. So next year, you all can go to GDC on Matt's recommendation.
I will say, if you're looking for... We did a lot of indie game coverage out of GDC, so you can see a lot of that. One that has my heart is Hua Tu. It's a Vietnamese game developer, and you're just a cute little fairy who, like, finds fuel for her little robot friend, and there's no combat or depth, just, like, surprisingly difficult puzzles and platforming. It's... Yeah, but you can read all that. Matt has coverage. We both have interviews going up with different developers. It's a very interview-heavy stuff for us. But we also got to do the Nintendo Switch 2 partner preview, and we were able to write up a few things on some of our standouts from that. So go to the website. See things.
Excellent. And yeah, my thing, I'll go with some music. I've been listening to Daniela Andrade for over a decade at this point. She started on YouTube, Honduran Canadian singer, just put out her first full-length album. It's like Latin R&B, but a little bit alternative and experimental, like ambient, weird, like just very, very good music. Just came out March 6th, I think, and she's going on tour this summer to support it. But if you like R&B, if you want somebody trying to do something a little bit different with it, I highly recommend it. It's called Oda. You can pick it up on Bandcamp. You can stream it wherever. But yeah, I really enjoy it. And that I haven't picked it up yet, but I will eventually talk about Johnny Blue Skies and the Dark Clouds new album, because it is not coming to streaming anywhere. You have to just go buy a physical copy. And I think they, as a promo, they uploaded it on YouTube temporarily for people to hear bits of it. And what I did hear, I enjoyed. So I was like, I need to get the rest of this. It's just like dirtbag 70s country rock. And I'm very much there
that's
here for
cool.
it. Yeah. But yeah, that's all I have for this week for what I've been enjoying. Where can people find you online?
You can find me at omamithrandier on Blue Sky, Instagram, pretty much everywhere, including Twitter here and there. And yeah. There.
Cool. Matt, do you want to be found?
You can find me up at wylo.net.
And you can find me on Blue Sky at most always Alex. And so with that, let's talk about conventions. I think we had just said cons and didn't specify. So yeah, for if you are somehow listening to this show and don't know what a con is, it is a bunch of dorks getting together to be dorks about a thing. It could be video games, comics, board games, anime, manga, YouTube, like just general pop culture, whatever. I think, would you say it's fair to say that adjacent to this, Kate, is like film festivals and South by and that kind of stuff? Or do those feel like their own space?
No. They are like the same. It's just people being dorks about movies. Like, genuinely.
That's fair, yeah.
Like, film festivals are longer and they take more and are more expensive. But I would say the spirit of the thing is still coming together in one place to celebrate X. And for festivals, it's a lot of, you know, video games, film.
I would just argue the only difference is festival means longer than convention.
Yes, yeah.
Oh, that,
convention,
yeah, that's
you're
a good
probably
way to
two
it,
to
yeah.
You're anywhere between 2 to 3, maybe 4 days, and festivals are usually at least 5 days, if not longer.
Mm-hmm. I think festivals structurally are a little bit different in that, like, you're not wandering a convention floor necessarily, like you're going into a bunch of screenings and that, but yeah. Okay, that's I like the distinction of how long you're there is a big part of it.
I mean, it is.
And yeah,
for various reasons.
Yeah. And was this episode directly inspired by GDC, or was it just something you've been thinking on?
It was deeply inspired by GDC.
Okay.
Yeah, and I can explain why when we start
talking
about
do.
Host cities.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of where we're at. Is, yeah,
you're
like,
jump
it's...
to it now? Yeah, no.
Yeah.
The big thing is this is probably the first time that I've met more Southern developers, like developers from the South, than I have ever met in one space, unless it was like in the cities, which was really, really cool. But it also meant that I had the same standing joke, and we all agreed the South would never, primarily in the fact that San Francisco does not believe in fans and air circulation. So everything just has hot, thick air, even if it's like 60 outside. It was really weird. And so that was something, and I know Matt and I have talked a lot about this independently as we've kind of traveled going to these things, is just that I hate having to go to the most expensive cities the most uncomfortable cities and being expected to pay that much money. And the reason that GDC brings this up is GDC very much is a make or break conference in a way that, like, I got my job there last year, right? Like, so mm-hmm. many people need to be there, but it is in one of the most expensive cities in the country, in San Francisco. And just talking with folks, it was a bunch of like, why are we here? Why are we in San Francisco? Why is everything in LA? And just kind of commiserating over the assumption of if you want to do things, you must be on a coast.
Yeah, it's, I mean, because it's, if you really think about it logically, the best place on a map in the US for a convention would be like Kansas. Right in the middle, everyone can get there pretty easy, but they don't have the infrastructure.
I was going to support say Denver, like dude.
Oh, yeah. Denver would be like more center, but with, actually have
with
the
infrastructure.
Hotels.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I think that's that
there
is part
are places,
of it. Is,
but so what you just did is what people think. They think, oh, an actual central location is this one with nothing around it, right?
I mean, Kansas is a terrible place.
It is a terrible place.
I nearly died in Kansas
so
before.
What
awful.
We do is we're all... We're going to sell everything we have. We're going to move to Kansas, buy some land, and start Convention City, where we just host cons.
Yes.
Every week is a new con.
So I will say this. The biggest thing we have about this is obviously we have problems, and we're going to discuss some proper thing. But honestly, the pandemic killed 85%, it feels like, of all conventions.
Yes.
Like, basically, we don't get, like, Wizard World. I don't even know if that stuff exists anymore. If it does, it's very rare. A lot of the, like, other comic stuff outside of SDCC pretty much gone. Like, as a person,
this small local stuff, because they didn't have the bank account to ride through not doing conventions.
Well, that's what I'm saying, because like when I look at a lot of these things of like, no, we used to do like almost an entire circuit just in like the state of Texas alone between going to Dallas, San Antonio, and obviously Austin, and to be fair, there was even some in Houston. And while there you can argue there's still like tiny little remnants of it, for the most part they don't exist anymore. Like, RTX is gone. Yeah. That used to be a 70,000 person convention. It's not there anymore. Like,
and that's a huge convention to just disappear.
Right. And obviously they had their own problems for other things.
Well, yeah.
But I mean, we think about just some of these other ones that have died over the years of just whether it's PAX South, whether it's RTX, whether it's even, like I said, the entire part of like, what was it? Wizard World and all of them. I think they got bought up and they used to do like, was it Heroes and
they used to do like if your city, like Austin Comic Con was brought to you by Wizard World.
All right, but then they even had like the heroes and villain type conventions that they did around the world that went to and all those, and they said there might be a few of them, but they're not as popular, they're not as big, and they're not pulling as much weight, if anything. And we used to have DreamHacks quite often. Now I think they're down to two. Basically a Dallas and an Atlanta one, which at this point can basically merged in from the high res together. And so I do think 2020 getting bought up by Crunchyroll Expo does not exist anymore.
Yeah. I think there's something weird going on where by all of those smaller conventions dying, it did kind of consolidate power in the people that could stay through. Like Reed Pop is one of the biggest names in the game. And where does Reed Pop put up stuff? L.A., Seattle, Chicago, New York.
Do they even
Florida.
Go to Chicago?
Like, yeah, they run C2E2.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I forgot C2E2 exists. But that also is at the same time as, like, everything else, isn't it? Isn't that late February?
Oh, I think it's February, yeah.
Yeah, but it's like, okay, so you're picking major, major cities. And, again, I can't fault somebody for wanting to do an event where there are people or do an event where there's infrastructure. Like, I know... there was something that Portland was trying to do with sports that it was like hosting NBA playoffs. Portland literally doesn't meet the infrastructure requirements to do that.
Yeah.
There's like actual rules of you need this many hotel rooms, you need this much public transit, yada, yada, yada. And Portland just isn't there. So that's why we've never done it.
Yeah.
And so like, I get it to some degree, like logistically, but it's like, there's still plenty of other places, other cities. I think Kate, you highlighted smartly with San Francisco is like, you are hosting this just in a place that is known for being expensive to exist in.
I think somebody did the math on the cost for them to get to GDC a couple of years back. And they were like,
oh no,
for the cost for me to go to GDC and stay in San Francisco for a week, I could go to Japan for 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's rough.
Like, we pay, our hotel had broken blinds, and it was a lot of money.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, that's kind of the big barrier to entry is like you're giving everyone travel expenses, mm-hmm. and bigger cities are more expensive to fly into. And that's usually, I mean, like LA has like what, 5 different airports, but if you want to go to LAX, like it's going to cost you, even though it's like the easiest one to get to. And same with lodging. Like if you do not live driving distance where you can just like, when I went to PAX, year before, I was staying with friend of the show, Ryan, and we drove in and we drove out, and that made it a lot easier. Instead of, like paying for an Uber or paying for parking, God forbid. Mm-hmm. It's just like all of these things are factors that stack up, and it seems like it's just of no concern to the people organizing these events.
And I think for me, the big thing here is like, I don't think it is because I don't think they care for like two mm-hmm. reasons. I think one, they have their solidified base, so they know that people are going to come no matter what. So like, what does it matter if we do it here? We've been doing it here forever. Mm-hmm. But I also do genuinely think when you do have certain conventions or conferences that do it outside of like, and only on the coast, like I think Chicago for me, I wouldn't mind going to Chicago for a convention, mm-hmm. but like the East Coast and West Coast, like on the, like those coastal cities have such a high cost to enter, even just mm-hmm. to stay, that I do think that they want it that way. They want people who have the money to burn. They want people to go and do that at their conventions. And I think by and large, like the poorest part of the country is the South. And I think that a lot of that comes with negative connotations where they don't think, despite Atlanta having everything that it has, that Atlanta mm-hmm. can host something, or they don't think that Texas can host something. Even taking Austin off the map, like there's 6 convention centers in Dallas and the surrounding mm-hmm. areas alone. Like, but they don't, I don't think they think about that, because I think to them, their target audience is that high income earner, burnable, like with mm-hmm. it's not burnable income,
disposable
income. And I think for them, they think that those people only exist in those cities to begin with, which I'm not going to say is right or wrong. But I think when you're catering towards fans of something, it also tells people, oh, well, you don't think your fans exist in this area, because PAX South died for the other two PAXes to hobble along, essentially.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's PAX West, PAX East, PAX Australia, and PAX Unplugged. And it's like, so how many game developers are you getting who are wanting to fly to Australia for your convention?
Yeah.
Versus who would have gladly flown to Texas? Because was that San Antonio was where PAX South was?
Yes.
Yeah.
So the biggest problem I have right here is, at the end of the day, one of the things the trip to GDC did was make me appreciate weirdly going to Seattle and LA, and that was mainly because at the end of the day, they are expensive, but at least they have actual proper infrastructure, in which I don't think San Francisco has the hotels.
No.
Mm.
And that's been a problem that's been discussed multiple times for multiple years about GDC is too big for it to be in San Francisco. The airport is terrible. The stuff is extra pricey. Hotels are not accommodating, and they're, once again, even more expensive. And it's just like, I don't think San Francisco has the infrastructure to do this, to account for this many people.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I personally don't like going to LA, but at least I know I can afford myself to be able to get to LA and back.
Yeah.
Seattle, obviously, is a little different because, so many people. But then the day, San Francisco, flying there sucks. And then flying out of there sucks. And then trying to find a place there also sucks.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say my issue with Seattle, and I'm sure you guys will agree with this, that building is ass.
Well, they don't use that building anymore, so it's fine.
They have a new one.
Wait, do they only use the new building now?
To be fair, I believe they, for the most part, tried to. I don't know if successful.
Okay, because when I was at, last time I was at PAX, they were still using both buildings with the sky bridge in the middle, and then also using the annex, like, that was a few blocks away.
So that was the last time we had went, but I knew if their plan to basically put it all in just that one building, because
it was such a mess.
For the longest time. Now, although I heard that this year at ECC, that wasn't enough C's, but Emerald City Comic Con, what I was seeing online was that the layout that they went with for the floor was also bad and was like sequestering indie artists like away from things. And people were like skipping parts of the building, assuming that there was nothing for them there. And it was like, oh no, that's where we put like all of like the artist booths and like all the fun stuff. That's not one of the big publishers or something. And so that also felt bad, but good to know that they have stopped using the terrible, terrible building with the sky bridge in the middle. Because that has been...
The sky bridge was cool. It's whatever.
The sky bridge is really cool. It's the, oh, I'm on the second floor in this area. And it's like, oh, so I have to go up a floor, cross the sky bridge, cross the convention floor, go down a back stairwell, and then I will find you. I have so many gripes about the Seattle Convention Center. I know it's not actually important. I just feel like it's bad. And so that's what makes it so weird that they're like, we're going to host stuff in Seattle. We're going to do Seattle. And I'm like, and you couldn't have found a better venue. Weirdly enough, there is now Washington SummerCon, which uses the fairgrounds, which has a huge exhibition hall. And it's just a pop culture convention.
Huh.
But it is just a big space where you can set up booths. There's nothing weird to navigate.
And I think that that's like been one of the interesting things, seeing like a lot of like local stuff make do with smaller spaces where like I do think it's because like Austin wasn't the biggest city, but like RTX was like 70,000 people. Like Austin could handle 70,000 people. We handle that for festivals and everything like that. So I also think there is a level of like elitism too, I think, that happens where it's like, well, only this city is capable of doing this. And it's not always the case.
Oh yeah. Well, like, that's the thing that surprised me is that Washington SummerCon being held in Puyallup, Washington, where the fairgrounds are, like when it started, it was not great. Like the guest list and everything. And now if you go on their website and look, it's like, oh, you guys are actually pulling in like pretty big names. Yeah. Consistently.
It's
like 45 minutes south of Seattle.
That's not bad.
That's all you have to do.
That's not bad at all. Which I mean, I think which is like the larger problem. Like we talk about it from like an attendee perspective. But like from a show, like a person who's showing at one of those, that is an enormous amount of your budget to have to facilitate. Because you have to buy the booth, which are about $15,000. Depending, if you want like a full space, a small space, a single computer,
and that it's all pay to play. Like how much space you
exactly
get, where you get
exactly, where are you positioned? Are you right down by the escalators? Then you have to pay all the salaries for everybody that's working there, or are they volunteering? Does that can you make that work? Then you have to get room and board and lodging for all of your employees. Like that ticket just ticks higher. And I think when we do look at the indie scene, whether it's comics, film, or games, discoverability is the number one thing. So like you need to be at those shows. You need to have a demo ready for somebody to play. Whether and not even just like, oh, press needs to see my game. No, like just people need to see your game and know that it exists in this saturated market. And it like cons, conferences, festivals, they've all have like this, if I don't go, everything will fail feeling attached to them. But like it's bankrupting people. Like it's not viable, especially in the cities that they're having them.
It's funny because like a lot of that stuff too, I know whenever I've gone to PAX there as like from an attendee perspective, even when I was there like doing press stuff, you have to look at a booth and you're like, do I think I can budget the time to try this? Or do I need to go get in that line over there because Capcom is making people wait 2.5 hours to play Resident Evil for 15 minutes? And that's, yeah, I mean, and also like that, you're competing with the flashing. Like I remember Resident Evil 7, they built like a house inside of the convention center. And then it's like, oh, cool. And like, you know, 50 feet away, there's just like some small indie booth with like two 10-year-old LCD TVs that they brought out and an Xbox 360 controller. And it's like, oh, that sucks. But again, like you said, there's that pressure. I have to come. I have to attend. I have to throw down the money. And then you find out that you are like, you're near foot traffic. That's nice. But that foot traffic is going to a time sink.
Well, and like the other thing too is like, I've seen developers show a game way sooner than it should have showed just because they know that they have to be there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the number of games I've tried where they're like, here's our card, you can look us up on Steam. And on Steam, it's like, this isn't even like in alpha. Like, this is, we will tell you when it's even available for like Steam Greenlight or whatever.
No, they have, I think, like I said, I think the consolidation of everything, because I feel like beforehand there was conventions, you know, all the time, for better or worse, and I feel like we covered a lot, we had a lot more range on what we were trying to find, and I do think mm-hmm. we're down to about, like, 4 video game ones, about, like, 2-3 comic ones, and film festivals at this point. 5-ish. And obviously you can argue there's a lot more, so I don't want to degrade some of them, but then the day of like, what is actually people are, you know, coming, like showing up and worth going to? Because like, yeah, I can probably find a film festival in Kansas, like we talked about beforehand. Mm-hmm. Also, it's going to be a bunch of random weird indie stuff, and you're like, cool, but also, what is the ROI in general of showing up to that? Unless I've built that explicit audience for the Kansas weird farming film festival or whatever we're running there, probably not going to do me any good.
Yeah. And that's from the press perspective. That's huge. Is like, yes, you're putting this on. Is there anything that people are going to want? Like, is going to this going to generate clicks for me in any capacity?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so I do think, because when I think of film festivals left, we basically, I think there's a Chicago one, I think there's an LA, Seattle, but I mean, you have South by, and then like a TIFF. I think, I'm sure there's a few other, like a Fantasia. But, like, outside of those, like, and I guess a New York one, but they do, a lot of them do tend to either overlap, or some of them have moved very much into very specific, like, niche-type stuff.
Yeah.
I think mm-hmm. you probably have a little better access, like I said, to film versus in games. I'm like, I don't know how many there actually are, to be honest. Like, there's, like, 4, if that.
And it's hard, too, because I think that, like, when you look at that consolidation, I think a really good example on the game side is that if the convention or gathering or conference that you're going to is sponsored by specific titles,
mm-hmm.
those titles are going to be everywhere and the others are not. And we've seen
that. Do you remember the table of Final Fantasy lanyards at PAX?
Yes.
It was that. There was literally just like a pile of thousands of free Final Fantasy lanyards.
Yeah. I mean, and the same thing happens at film festivals. Like, I know that if I'm going to South By because of the folks who run South By, all of the A24 stuff is gonna screen just because mm-hmm. of the people who run it. I may not see some neon stuff. Or like Fantastic Fest, which has a big beef with Neon because Neon used to own the festival. I'm not going to see any Neon things, right? Yeah. Like it's this, there's so much internal politicking that also happens that, to Matt's point, consolidation really points out or started to point out a lot of those issues even more so, I think.
Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting phenomenon, and it's not unique to conventions or anything, where the people who put it together have a lot of say over, you know, what's going to make the floor and where it's going to be, which then has sway over who's going to show up. And so it's kind of like the same studios and the same press outlets kind of reinforcing each other over and over. And it makes it increasingly difficult to break in as press or as a publisher to those events. Like, it just keeps raising the barrier to entry. And then, you know, you get to where people are like, why, like, where are the indie games? Like, why do I, you know, how do I get into this? Like, I remember it was a big deal at the time, but this was a while ago, cause it was when the Wii U was still out. And Nintendo literally just got a whole room in, near Emerald City Comic Con, got a whole room at PAX at a hotel, like a ballroom, and just had indie developers there. They were like, we're going to make a point to showcase this. And that was, at the time, an unusual, unexpected move from Nintendo. They have since embraced indie developers, but at the time it was like, you as a huge company are throwing your weight and your money behind small companies, and you're making a unique, novel experience for people as a result. And actually, that PAX was one of the most fun that I've had, just going there and trying out a bunch of cool little things that I wouldn't have seen otherwise.
Yeah. Which ends up getting to the other part of, outside of that, of I'm sorry, but Lyfts and Ubers and rideshare is now way more expensive than it used to be, and it sucks.
Mm-hmm.
But oh, yeah. I think the amount of stuff of where I can figure out a flight, I can sometimes figure out a hotel. I still pay hundreds of dollars and just trying to get to the airport and back.
Oh, yeah. Well, and even like if you don't stay at a hotel right next to the convention, it's you have to do the math of like, would it have been cheaper to just pay the extra $150 a night to stay nearby?
Yeah, I mean, that's just the fun game you play. I've learned to stay closer for convenience and because eventually, even if I'm off by $20, convenience or just the ability to go back to the hotel. I don't think people understand like how valuable it was. I know when we've done PAX West over many, many years, we used to stay with friends for the longest time. And in the last few years, we would maybe still stay with them, but during the weekend explicitly for PAX, we just would stay in a hotel downtown. And it wasn't that we couldn't stay with them, but it just became too much of a pain, whether it be Ubering in or just the fact you're carrying a backpack for like hours on end.
There's nowhere you need to power nap between demos.
Yeah, you can't. Yeah, I was like, you can't change. You can't do anything. You can't. You're still carrying stuff. You know, you're showing up to like a mixer. People are dressed in fine dressing. You're wearing a backpack and some shorts. I mean, partially maybe just the weather and style. The other partial is I have no other option to go home.
Yeah. You're like, if you guys want me in a suit, I will be back in an hour and a half.
Yeah, I remember doing our first TGAs was like that. We were just going back and forth of like, do we walk to the hotel and change or do we not? When do we go? Mm-hmm. When do we do this? Like, how long do we have? And obviously, you know, a lot of times you can just show up in places, whatever, and that's fine. But it is just kind of like if you did want to even just freshen up, it becomes a just kind of a pain. Or just like I said, carrying a backpack, depending what you have in there, after a couple hours takes its toll.
Oh, definitely. I mean, even that, like the planning that has to go into it. I mean, conventions are hard. It's easier if you're there as like press who has appointments behind closed doors and you're not just wandering the floor. I feel like I've been a little bit on both sides of that where I've had scheduled interviews and I get to go sit down and do things. And then I've gone to conventions where I am just on my own for figuring out how to effectively use my time and get to everything I need to get to cover stuff. And again, this goes back to the reinforcing who's going to get their voice amplified and who's going to get their game seen.
Yeah. It's just been a while because I think of like South By, which is a local, quote unquote, a local festival for us, and how much money we still had to spend to go there every single day, whether it was parking, driving, Ubering, and other stuff of just like getting from point A to point B all the time was a pain in the ass. And so it is just like, I think there's a lot of things now, whether it's we jack, which it also is illegal. I don't understand why places are allowed to jack up prices because of an event going on, which should be illegal, but we live in America.
It's so bad.
Because I think the hotel we were staying at in San Francisco, like I think that like three, if we were to book it the following week, was like a fifth of the price. And you're like, this is stupid and should be illegal.
Yeah.
And you can argue about supply and demand all you want. I don't really care. I take consumer rights over whatever your other shit is.
It's the same thing with freaking flights and everything. Like, I don't get it. And I think, like, ultimately, like, there are so many things in place to make our hobbies more and more exclusionary. A lot of it is capitalism because that's always a bullet point.
It's all
on the notes for that. that like there is a pricing out of hobbies and joy that is going to continue to happen. Like, I'm not saying that cons have to be accessible to everybody or whatever, but like I do think that going to a convention with your friends, I think for most people who are really invested in a piece of pop culture, whether it's film, games, comics, anime, that is like, that's the moment. That's where everybody is working to, right? That those are the group chat plans, trying to get to the one fun thing where we can all unify around it. And I think that it gets harder to see that and understand that as something positive when it keeps costing more money or it is very specifically forgetting that entire sections of the country exist. It gets hard.
Yeah. I mean, I would say also forgetting, and this is maybe specific to Comic-Con type conventions, but forgetting sections of the hobby, like the main part of the hobby, like going to Comic-Con and seeing a third of the floor seems to be for like celebrity meet and greets, and then all of the comic artists are like shoved in a corner somewhere. And it's like, what are we actually showcasing here at this point? Like, did you forget the name of the convention?
This is why I don't do Comic-Con thing. Yeah. I went to one, Kate convinced me to there, and I was like, am I supposed to just walk around and spend money to like say hi to people? And she was like, yes. And I was like, I don't like this. I was like, so what am I supposed to do? And he's like, you just go wait in lines and spend money. And I'm like, this sounds awful.
Yeah, it's basically, if you've ever been in a mall and seen any store like Box Lunch that sells a bunch of like nerd merch, it's that blown out to a convention, but also you can meet celebrities.
Yeah, that's what I said. I was like, why do I need to be here?
Like, I would say that was also, it was a rapid change, because when I started going to Comic-Con type stuff in like the early 2010s, it was still like mostly about comics. Yeah. And then I think very quickly they realized like, oh, we can just bring in like three of the Avengers who are sort of related to each other, and people will give us $400 to take a picture with them.
Yeah, because that's funny, because that's what Kate told me. Kate was like, well, when I went here a few years ago, because at this point it's probably like 2017, 2018, last time we went to like one of those, and she's like, this was totally different. And I was like, yeah, it may have been, but it's not now. I was like, because I was like, I don't, cool.
Great.
I mean, I got to meet Kevin Conroy, which was great, but also like, I didn't need to spend as much money to get in there, because it was just weird of like, I pay money to go into a building to wait in line to pay more money. And I was like, that seems like a lot of extra money and a lot of extra steps and wasted time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I will say one of the things, like, I think that the best convention experiences that I've been to recently, one was TennoCon, and that was just because it's literally around one singular IP. It is a Warframe convention, or a Digital Extremes convention, of which they have two big games, Warframe and Soulframe, and that is all it is about. And that felt like being like a fly on the wall in somebody's beloved third space. And that was because it was around one thing. MagicCon, very similar. Because it's all about magic. Mm-hmm. Like, that was a really great experience, because it was the first time I was on a show floor where I didn't feel like I was getting, like, everything was just being thrown in my face to buy these, like, Box Lunch weird little backpacks that nobody will ever use. They were selling, like, useful stuff.
Hold on, time out. Does everybody remember the mystery box phase that we went for 10 years?
Pay $40, but it's a $100 box, really. It was never really a $100 box.
Yep. You're talking about we got Frisbees and dog bowls and leashes that were, like, 2 feet?
And then that's
still
happening.
You have to consider the licensing fees, Matt.
And that's still happening at places. MagicCon, that wasn't happening. There was a lot of, like, sell your cards, meet your local game shop. Like, there was like one in Austin that was there, and I got to just talk to them, because the whole thing is trying to get people. They set up tournaments that were just like, they were casual. You just entered and then you played with people. It was really fun. It was also in the heart of Atlanta, where there is a lot to do and a lot of really good food around you. Because Atlanta, if you don't know, its convention center is connected to its football stadium and also connected to like two hotels and the Football Hall of Fame, or the College Football Hall of Fame. So there's a lot to do within like a small amount. And people's feelings towards Chick-fil-A notwithstanding, but I could go order a large chicken nugget meal for $11 at the Chick-fil-A in Atlanta, which sounds weird. That shit is $14 here in Austin.
Yeah. I was going to say, I feel like, we've talked about the South a lot on this podcast, but I feel like everybody seems to forget that Atlanta's a major city. In the same way that people watch movies and they're like,
it's a Delta hub.
Well, I was going to say, in the same way that like people like have these like movie informed visions of other countries, they have this like not even movie informed version of Atlanta, just this idea that like the South is all rural, and it's like, no, Atlanta's a city. It is not rural.
It's a gigantic city.
Yeah.
With one of the biggest airports that handles the most amount of traffic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's, I mean, because at the end of the day, like, what this whole conversation comes down to is there are more major cities than just, like,
yes.
L.A., Seattle, New York, Chicago.
Yes.
honestly, if anything, now I'm just a little offended that Reed Pop's Southeast convention is in Florida and not Atlanta.
Wait, like, really? Why?
I didn't even know they had a Southeast convention.
I don't think it's called that, but they have a con they do in Florida.
Is it the MegaCon one?
Oh, let me look.
Maybe MegaCon. If it's MegaCon, it's because it is close to
Orlando.
Yes, which was a big hub for one of the studios. That was
the major con. The major con I know in Florida is basically MegaCon, which is a relatively
Florida SuperCon.
Oh, SuperCon. Yeah, that one I don't. Oh, I see. Yeah.
How bad are we at naming conventions? We just call it MegaCon, SuperCon. Well, mm-hmm. Which city is it in, at least in Florida?
Oh, I don't think it's... The fact that they don't list the city makes me concerned.
They don't.
I think you're making it up. These quotes.
Is it Miami? This is a cute logo, though. It's a little alligator.
So MegaCon, I believe, is in Orlando, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, MegaCon's in Orlando.
Okay.
Which is still a relatively large one, if they're still doing it. I have no idea.
Yeah, and that spun out of Guardian Con, which was like a Destiny convention type thing, if I remember.
Well, I think Guardian Con still exists, doesn't it?
I thought they, like, conjoined.
Maybe. I don't know. That's been the other thing. I know some of them have conjoined.
It's been weird. But there are more places. To be honest, I wouldn't be mad at more Chicago things. Like, if there was a PAX in Chicago, I would be happy. If GDC was in Chicago or Vegas or, you know, Denver, like, I think all of those are, like, better places with infrastructure that are cheaper.
The funny part for me is everybody keeps trying to think like they're threatening me when they're like, we're going to move it to Vegas. And I'm like, I will gladly go to Vegas.
Dude,
I can afford to go to Vegas. People can't afford to go to Vegas because they gamble, not because
I will pay $80 a night down or $50 a night down at the Planet Hollywood, and I'll meet y'all at the convention. Like, I don't care.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, I feel like my understanding is that right now Vegas is like floundering pretty hard. And I'm like, why are you not just trying to soak up convention traffic?
Yeah.
Like,
I think they are, to be honest. It's just
people like DICE
just think
has
Vegas
bigger.
Is bad.
Yeah. No.
We just need to teach Vegas that blind boxes and booster packs are a type of gambling. And
there's
therefore
already MagicCon.
It is in their wheelhouse.
I'm going to Vegas in May because of MagicCon. MagicCon is in three cities. It used to be in Chicago, but they're taking it out and putting it international. So it's in Las Vegas, Amsterdam, and Atlanta.
Mm. Which is another thing that's been interesting to see of, like, as we've talked about, like, the consolidation and condensing of, like, U.S. conventions of, like, you know, South By is now in London. TwitchCon is, like, in Amsterdam. MagicCon is now over, like, not saying that...
Sundance has a Mexico City.
Yeah, that a lot of these conventions have now split up and have gone international to make international events. I don't know, which is also weird because, like, I can't speak for all of them, but I know, like, South By, like, I feel like every year they were just laying off people. I feel like it's just like three people on a hamster wheel running that entire festival. Yeah. But yet they're like, we do one in London every year. We now do two South Bys, or, you know, and then, like, TwitchCon, we have a European one, and now we have, you know, a regular US American one. Yeah. Or US, I guess, US one. But it's just interesting of seeing, like, some of these have gone overseas, you know, and have put on stuff. So instead of getting two here, or we change there. And so that's been interesting to see. And I mean, glad we're expanding, but it is just kind of like things feel condensed here and we're going to the same three things, while over there they're just like rotating out cities.
Ooh. I do have an update. DreamHack is doing really not good because they only have one U.S. DreamHack now.
Which one is it? Is it Atlanta?
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean Dallas is dead?
Yeah. They have Birmingham, Atlanta, and Stockholm.
Mm.
RIP to a real one. I like DreamHacks.
I want to see more stuff in more places.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, that's all it is.
And I think that's what, like, this ultimate, like, thing comes down to, is that you shouldn't only get a community in something that you love if you live in the right place. And that is more and more what's happening. I also think professionally, and I don't think anybody really thinks about game studio or game conventions like this, but when you go to a gaming convention, there's a lot of spaces to network, see indie devs, partner with PAX used to partner with a lot of local high schools to show off stuff that they were building. It opens opportunity. And for me, like and less so being from Texas, but like having coworkers who are in like Huntsville, Alabama or like Floribama area, being very specific about like, I am tired of being told that if I wanted to be a dev, I had to move to the coast. And a lot of that mentality is not just propped up by where certain companies choose to do their business. It is propped up also by where we go for leisure. It is propped up by where we go for conferences. And that reinforces those stereotypes and those assumptions, because not everybody has the means to leave the places that they live, and not everybody wants to. And I think even if I'm going to like a convention for a few days, like it sucks. It's a lot to do, especially like that far away. So I don't know. More people should be able to have a good experience and not have to bankrupt themselves doing it.
Yeah.
Put more stuff.
Because again, it's that thing of like conventions need to cost whatever they need to operate. And, you know, I don't want to suggest like, well, the people putting it on should be the ones who go bankrupt instead. But it is that thing of like, you are making this product and making it increasingly exclusive. And these are supposed to be outlets and an opportunity for people to get their stuff in front of people. And you just raising the price on that opportunity more and more for the people present. I mean, this is going to sound conspiracy brained. You're a middleman as the convention organizer. You are charging people money to show their stuff, and you are charging other people to see that stuff.
Yeah.
When you just keep raising the price on both of those, the bottom is going to fall out on one side or the other eventually. And as soon as it falls out on one side and people stop coming or people stop presenting, the other side will not come back the next year.
Which we can argue we are seeing some, because at the end of the day, we are getting less international tourism overall, whether it is for conventions or just actual tourism.
And yeah, so how bad was GDC on that this year? Because I know a lot of people were like, it's straight up not safe to go, so I won't.
It's funny because I think I talked with more international people than I didn't. But there is a noticeably fewer amount of developers in general there. There was a very large portion of students who were there compared to past years. But there just was not a lot of people there at all. And that's just, I've only been one time. So from last year to this year, it feels like attendance is like at least a quarter down, if not more. Because I could barely move through stuff last year with how many people were there. The floor was like overwhelming because of how much there was.
I mean, whole own angle of the issue of putting everything in so few buckets is like, well, if I don't make it to this convention, when am I going to get my next opportunity?
And so you
get these like, honestly, kind of unpleasant floors to navigate where there's too many people there. And obviously the company can market it as their biggest, their most successful, their whatever. And it's like, yeah, but it kind of sucked because you just like ran the building to capacity and then told everyone, we're going to close the doors at 7 or whatever, like see whatever you want to see before then.
Yeah.
And it's like, it would be maybe a little less crowded and a little more manageable if you hosted the event in multiple places. But I don't know. I mean, conventions are also just like a weird thing in and of itself. But yeah, it's just a lot of this feels, I don't have necessarily an answer on how to fix it, but it all feels fixable. Like it doesn't have to be the way that it is. And that's my frustration.
The question begins. So basically, maybe 1 minute, basically 2020, whether it was consolidation, the ending of a lot of stuff between a lot of bellying up of conventions and local stuff and consolidation. There also, at the end of the day, that we went to more online things. And at the end of the day, why would you pay all $15,000 to have a booth if I can just make my own online little trailer, which I can curate everything I want, have what I want, and then I can basically have who I want to basically have any type of coverage that I need. Which we've seen more, whether it's PlayStation, what is State of Plays, Xbox Directs, Nintendo Directs, and we've even seen them with other smaller publishers, like Square has done one before. Of like, not saying you shouldn't go there, but in the day, if I can just publish all my stuff online, y'all are going to do, like, do whatever.
No, I mean,
and
so, sorry.
I was going to say, so at the end of the day, whether they don't need to show up for to save costs, or people just don't feel like, why would I show up? Or they've learned, like you said, if you're only wanting to play two games for a PAX, do you want to show up and wait 6 hours in line to hopefully finally get in? Mm-hmm. Like, that's just a lot of wasted time and money, and where you can just wait and do stuff. And so,
I mean, I remember that 1 year at PAX where, because of the press hour beforehand, when we got in, a bunch of the lines were already capped.
Yeah. Yes.
And it was like, that's insane. Like, that's not a way to run things, where you open the door. And it's not even like I had to get to the other side of the convention hall. It was 50 feet in front of me and already capped.
Yeah.
And the doors had just opened. And it's like, do better. Like, this sucks.
But I mean, it's limited of what we can do and how long you do things. And I mean, that's been the problem, honestly. Yeah. You can argue with all gaming show to a degree, with a fair foul of how long do you make a demo, and is this demo worth it? Because, like, paying 20 minutes of a game, probably not worth it in some cases, maybe worth it in others. But also, 20 minutes just means you're only playing 3 people at that station per hour. And that's probably not even that much, because you'd have to transition. So you're probably looking at 2 people per hour. And so, like,
well, and then you have to look at the equipment of, like, let's say 2 people per hour and you have 20 stations. So you're getting 40 people through an hour, and you had to bring 10 Xbox Series X, 10 TVs, like all the custom built infrastructure or whatever. That's for like a bigger booth, and like the cost stacks up immediately.
Well, I mean, even then, like I said, if you're only doing 40 people every hour and you only did, like, you know, 10 hours, you're only looking at, what, 400 people, I guess?
Out of the thousands,
yeah, after like the 80,000 that are there, like, it's just kind of like up in the air, and that's not even necessarily their fault, because in the day, like, you are exploring what you're doing, and like I said, either 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, you have to be able to have something to take a demo. It needs to be one, you know, relative. And some games, you know, you can argue works fine, other games, but no, it is. And I think if you start doing cost analysis, I do wonder how much consumer stuff is down, or maybe it's up. I don't really know, but I do know, from consolidation of that and people learning we can just showcase our stuff online.
Yeah.
You can argue the average person's not playing a demo anyways at a convention. So I can, but I can show them everything they need to see via this online thing.
Well, and that was like what I was going to say to you is, like, I think that the PAXs are on their way out. Like, they feel like from stuff that I've seen, what they have. And it is because companies are just keeping stuff close to their chest. I also think, though, like, in an effort to rehabilitate a lot of, like, the theater stuff, the same thing is kind of happening with festivals when you look at the types of films that they're debuting. In order to give, like, exclusivity to either specific festivals, which has always happened, or more specifically, running parallel to events happening in New York or L.A. And it's kind of like, oh, why did I need to pay for this festival when, like, people are just fucking watching it at these other places? It's weird. I don't know the answer. I don't think what we're doing is the answer.
No.
But I also don't have a fix or a solve, just a very, very annoying pet peeve of having to go to the coasts every time I want to do an event.
Yeah. It's, I mean, and it's also one of those, like, it's a little uniquely American in that the landmass that is our country is so fucking huge.
And also, which is the whole other topic, whether or not your city is walkable.
Yes.
Is very important to placement. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
World Cup's gonna be a doozy. That's not even a convention.
Like, I know,
that's people realizing that they're just surrounded by parking lots because of the way America builds things.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, like, I know where, like, the Oregon Convention Center is in Portland, and there's, like, some stuff near there, but it's not, like, a ton of restaurants or anything. There's hotels near it. Like, that's the one nice thing. But yeah, it's, like, not great necessarily. Like, and our public transit is okay. Like, it's not amazing. So yeah, it's like, are we ever going to get bigger conventions here? I don't know that I see that happening, because I don't see the infrastructure.
Well, the question becomes, should you invest in the infrastructure? Because what we've learned from the Olympics and all these other events is people build giant Olympic stadiums, all the infrastructure, and then it just basically goes to rot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've seen that happen in LA.
It's the opposite of Field of Dreams.
Atlanta. Yeah. They build it, they come, and then everybody leaves, and then you're just left with a giant stadium of nothing.
Listen, this isn't an episode about the Olympics, but I don't understand why we don't just have one Summer Olympics in a neutral place and one Winter Olympics, like Coliseum, in a different neutral place. And just that's the only place it ever goes, or like one per continent. And we just rotate through, because having countries build entire athletic facilities to use it for 2 weeks is insane.
It's so bad, whether all the people that get displaced from their homes, all the people that are just buried under the stadiums, both literally and figuratively. It's just, I don't understand either of like how we keep trying to do this. Because didn't we have, was it this past year where they had to move stuff to Oklahoma because they didn't actually have the resources to do it? Or is that coming up?
I think that's coming up.
Yeah, I think one of the Olympics are coming up to where they actually, because I think it's supposed to be in LA or something, but they had to do half of it in Oklahoma. Because they actually don't have the facilities and infrastructure to do some of the stuff they're wanting to do.
That's weird, because hasn't LA hosted the Olympics before? We're on a tangent, but I'm like, didn't they already host it once?
And they built a lot of buildings and places where other things should be.
Yeah.
Look, rapid.
Well, now we have an episode next Summer Olympics.
Yeah, so that's what I said. So Oklahoma City will host the canoe and softball competition for the LA 28 Summer Olympics, providing a unique, sustainable subsite for the games. So they'll be held. Yeah, so basically they're doing.
Can you imagine being like, yo, I'm going to the Olympics. I'm going to LA. Yep. No, my bitch ass is going to Oklahoma.
And when and once we have won or lost, I will maybe fly to Los Angeles.
Yes.
Yeah, so basically you have to fly 1,300 miles
depressing.
To do your event.
That's a level of depressing.
Yeah, I was like, I couldn't remember if it happened just now or whatever, but I just remember they could not actually build something and stuff. Randomly got moved to Oklahoma of all places, and I was like, oh, okay. Which also, by the way, there's plenty of, like, we talk about, like, yeah, we have states. Also, Oklahoma is not one of them that has infrastructure to do things. Mm-hmm. I don't know why we're doing
it. I was going to say, like, to put a positive spin on this, good for Oklahoma. You got a huge event coming.
Sure.
It's sure, also so the funny thing, because I think when I was having this talk, somebody who overheard it was like, well, there's nothing in the South for this. And then like the dev I think it was at one of our demo things. And the dev that I was sitting with was from South Carolina. And he was like, I don't even like football. But yes, the South does have accommodations and hotels and enough to cover like 120,000 people. Like in a stadium, like literally the biggest football stadium is a college football stadium. Like, shut up. You don't know. You don't
understand. No, we have to go to cities that don't even have their stadiums in their actual city, because they've basically outside the city.
God. It is also frustrating that they're not playing World Cup games in college stadiums, because those are perfectly located next to everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, like,
sorry, I was trying to look up the capacity for the Atlanta Convention Center.
Oh yeah.
Out of curiosity. Couldn't find it, but it is 150,000 square feet of exhibit space, not including all the backstage stuff. It's huge.
It's gigantic. It is the biggest I've ever been into. And it was great. And I got good food. Anyway. Yeah, just look up at attendance numbers for SEC schools and then you will learn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that does it for me for this week. Do you guys have any last thoughts? Or
no, I don't really have any last thoughts other than I hate San Francisco.
All I know is
that one can fall. The Bay Area can fall into the Bay. LA, you're safe for now.
I think my whole thing is that nothing has made me more filled with Southern pride than having to go to California like 10 times a year.
Yeah. I get that.
Also, I believe in a flour tortilla. Y'all should look up what a flour tortilla is.
It was
it's
funny.
Not a mouse pad. It has substance. It has actual taste. It's not rubber.
Matt's face every time he ordered tacos and he got like a corn tortilla was depressing. It's very sad.
It was on me, to be honest.
Well, I didn't realize that the West Coast had such an aversion to flour tortillas.
They hate
them. Yes, they do.
So it's like, essentially, if you're going to get collard greens, like, you get them in the South, but you can get mac and cheese everywhere. You mm-hmm. can get flour tortillas in Texas and that part, like central northern Mexico. You can get corn tortillas everywhere, but you can only get flour tortillas in that section.
Okay.
Yeah.
The only section that matters.
Yeah.
Because they have flour tortillas.
Listen, I love a good flour tortilla.
They're delicious.
I get it. Like,
and they sop up things. Like, have you ever tried to sop up a sauce with a corn tortilla? It doesn't work.
It's bad.
It's not good. It just spreads it around. But if you have a flour tortilla for your mole, like...
Mm-hmm.
I will give them credit that they've at least made better corn tortillas over the last decade. Because I never could eat them. But now they're like at least somewhat edible. You still look like mouse pads and feel like mouse pads. But like...
Yeah.
I will say this is making me feel validated. Obviously, I'm in Portland. We have some good Mexican food, but not the best. But I've always had a preference for flour tortillas, and people have looked at me like I'm crazy
because you gotta come to Texas.
Corn tortillas are so prevalent. Yeah. And I'm like, no, I like a good flour tortilla.
You gotta go to the other Mexicans, not just the ones on the West Coast.
The funny part is I think it's only West Coast, because if you go up through Oklahoma and even Kansas and them, they're still doing flour.
It is just the West Coast. Like it's like it's a cuisine thing.
Huh.
They
also,
Mexican,
I feel like
they
corn
also
tortillas
don't
also
have
break.
As much beef.
Yes, they do. They snap like crazy. They're not flexible. Yeah.
They also don't cook enough meat. They put too much greens in their stuff.
We got to do a taco episode.
We do need to do a taco episode.
We've been to a taco festival before, and then they all I did was end up eating San Antonio tacos all the time. I was like, they got tacos from all around the country and state here, and I was like, I'm just going to eat San Antonio tacos.
It was Dr. Pepper braised brisket tacos. It was all the most delicious thing in existence, and it
that
wasn't sticky
really
sweet. It was, I love
it. But no, I do remember going to a taco festival, and after trying all the tacos, I ended up just eating. Not sadly, but it's just funny how I ended up like, oh, where'd you eat the most from? Just San Antonio tacos, apparently.
Listen, I know what I like. I know what I'm about.
I tried, okay? I tried. And I was like, I can't do this. Some of these are fine, but you just...
Because the whole time you're eating it, you know that behind you is the San Antonio tacos.
I know. That's what I wanted.
How do you... Like, I was... It is so hard being from San Antonio... Living in Austin and having everybody say, we're in the taco cap. No, you're not. Shut up. You're not. You are so not. Go
no
away.
Different than Houston trying to claim the barbecue title right now. And I'm like, no, I've had you, but you're not. No.
Is that also Austin or is it just definitely not Houston?
It's definitely, not,
definitely
Houston.
Not Houston.
I think Austin is up there. I think you can make a case for Austin.
I think
it's
like that hill country area.
I know, but
like
I could argue
Austin.
Like
Austin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can make a case for Austin's. Houston, you have good barbecue, and I'm not going to hate it. Better than a lot of other places, but you're not.
But also, like, when it comes to, like, top-tier-ranked barbecue joints, they have Gatlin, and I think that's it. Mm. Austin at least has, like, 3 or 4.
Even Dallas has pretty good barbecue. It's a little different sauce-wise, but, like, overall, I'd still take Dallas over probably Houston.
But Dallas sucks.
Yeah, but their barbecue is still good.
I'm learning so
Dallas
much about
the Texas
the politics
from King
of the
Hill,
Texas.
Alex.
No, the problem is people,
yeah.
People show up to Texas and they go to Dallas and they're like, this place sucks. And I'm like, yeah, but you went to Dallas.
You went to Dallas.
That's
you
your
went
problem.
To the worst part
yes.
of it.
Anyway.
Yeah, that's fair. I get that.
Stop
yeah, I think
putting
that
things
this
in Dallas.
Go get some barbecue, not from Houston. Don't go to Dallas. Go to conventions. Conventions become accessible. These are the lessons of the episode.
Exactly.
But yeah, if you listening at home want more, we do have it. But Why Though is on Blue Sky at butwhytho.net. You can also subscribe to our newsletter, which is free, or donate. That's money by going to the site butwhytho.net/support. Everything you give goes towards keeping our lights on, helping us pay our writers, helping us to do the stuff that we do, make the content that you enjoy. Kate, Matt, thank you so much for joining me, and thank you at home for listening. We'll see you next time.